Yeah, thanks, sir. So, today I'd like to tell you about properties of heterogeneous graphene. That is, graphene with hydrogen atoms chemically adsorbed on its surface. Okay, so first, let me give you experimental motivation for this work. So, as Paco told us yesterday, graphene is a well-conducting semi-metal. So even at the Dirac point, its conductivity is of the order of a few e squared over h, right? So it appears that it's difficult to make graphene insulating. Okay, recently Geim group was trying to find a way to induce insulating behavior in the vicinity of the Dirac point, they showed that this indeed can be achieved by hydrogen adsorption. Okay, so let me tell you a little bit about their experiment first. So what they do first, so their experiment basically consists of three stages. So this is so first, they heat up graphene to about 300 degrees centigrade. And this is done to get rid of water and whatever other residues they might have. Basically, this is to make the graphene surface clean and open to hydrogen adsorption. So what they do next, they expose graphene surface to hydrogen plasma, right? And if they do it for a long enough time, then a chemical reaction happens. So basically what happens, so if this is graphene lattice, a hydrogen atom can chemically bind to one of the carbons, okay? So for this carbon, sp2 bond transforms to sp3. Right, so basically, hydrogen binds to the p orbital, which is the one responsible for the transport in clean graphene. Okay. Now, once they do that, they can measure electronic properties, and they find rather interesting behavior. So let me plot schematically what they find. So so first let's look at just resistivity as a function of carrier density. Okay,
is this supposed to be dilute hydrogen?
That's not clear.
Okay.
So there is, at present it's still.
They don't know how much.
No. Because then, there is no really easy direct way to measure it, right? Maybe it would be possible with an STM, but STM on single sheet graphene is not so easy to do, right? So. Before hydrogenation, resistivity looks just like for any other graphene sample with the, so it has a rather narrow peak at the Dirac point with a value of order h over 4 e squared, right? But once this heterogeneation is done, what happens? First of all, the Dirac peak becomes a lot broader. Also some doping is introduced. And most remarkable thing that they find is that resistivity at the Dirac point can become very large. So at 4 Kelvin, they find something of the order 500 kilo-ohm. Okay, and they also measure temperature dependence of the resistivity, and it follows variable range Hopping law, right? So this is really, really an insulator. Okay. So one more electronic property they have looked at is magnetic resistance. Okay. So let me plot another graph for the magnetic resistance. So for actually let's look at the resistivity as a function of density at some fixed field. Before heterogeneation, they find a nice quantum Hall behavior, right, with the resistivity vanishing at incompressible densities. But after heterogeneation, quantum Hall is completely gone, right? And resistivity looks something like that. So you can see some shoulders which probably signal that quantum Hall starts developing, right? But still the resistivity is very large. Okay.
Can you say anything? Or do they know anything about the temperature dependence of these line chains?
Well, in the vicinity of the Dirac point, it still follows variable range hopping.
Uh-huh.
So they did measure that, yeah. So one more interesting thing about this experiment is that if we look at the resistivity at the Dirac point as a function of magnetic field, you find that resistivity decreases. Okay, so there is negative magnetic resistance, right? And this negative magnetic resistance is rather large. Okay.
Say that when you introduce the hydrogen, the system becomes an insulator.
Yeah. When you
and how you change the density of graphene? Change the density when you have a lot of hydrogen in the system?
Well, but so each hydrogen can take one electron, right? So this way you would dope.
So in this curve with the magnetic field, you change the gate voltage and you change the density and you press the hydrogen.
Here, yeah. I mean, here of course I shifted the plot for hydrogenated graphene right to the Dirac point, just to make the comparison easier.
But then from this shift of the peak, you should estimate the number of hydrogen. The amount of hydrogen.
I'm not sure if it's that straightforward.
If you say it's like one electron greater.
I'm not sure if you can do that.
I mean, you get that shift even without the hydrogen, for
example. Right. I mean,
experimentally, that's what they
say. Pretty much.
Not, the Dirac point is usually not right at zero gate voltage.
Right.
They have two experiments with the same sample.
Right.
Before
yes.
But I'm not sure. So for example, if hydrogen forms dense puddles, then I'm not sure how many electrons per hydrogen atom you take. Okay, and I mean, pretty much, I think for any kind of junk that you can have on the surface, you would have some doping, right? Because it can, so say if you have many atoms sitting on top of graphene, right, they would introduce some potential which can act as a gate voltage, essentially, right? So it's actually finding density of hydrogen from directly from doping is not a straightforward task. Okay.
But suppose one naively expect that hydrogen more or less take out one electron, then what would be the estimate for the hydrogen?
Well, then you would get something like something like that. Okay. That's if you just look at the doping. Mm-hmm. Question that I would like to ask in relation to this experiment is basically what is the state of hydrogenated graphene, right? So how do hydrogen atoms position themselves? So in principle, there could be two opposite situations, right? So one situation would occur if the hydrogen atoms cannot hop from side to side, right? So then if they bind somewhere, they just stay there, right? And in this case, you would presumably get guess of hydrogen atoms, okay? So another situation, which is actually supported by STM experiments done on graphite surface, is that hydrogen atoms can diffuse between carbon sites, okay? If that's indeed the case, I want to ask how would they position themselves? Okay, would they? There are several possibilities, right? They may want to form dense puddles. They may want to form some kind of super lattice. But to understand which one is realized, we need to understand the interactions between hydrogen atoms. All right, and. So one source of interactions which turns out to be dominant is the interactions mediated by the Dirac C. Okay, so essentially it is an effect similar to the Casimir effect, but with but here the role of photons is played by the Dirac fermions. Okay.
Are you going to tell us how important that is relative to more mundane things?
Well, it goes as so. If you look at the pairwise interaction, it goes as 1/r. Right. So it's stronger than, for example, stress. Right. So stress would go. Stress would go as a higher power of R.
Shouldn't there also be electrostatic interactions?
But that would probably go as dipole-dipole,
right?
Which is 1/r³, right? So, yeah, so those are two other possible sources of interaction, dipole-dipole and stress-mediated.
What about just local interaction, very short range?
Of course, that to understand that you need to do some first principle calculations, right? So within some effective theory, you know, I cannot describe that, right? But actually,
if there's some chemistry intuition. Imagine you put one there and you're changing the bonding from S-P-T-S. Bond angles want to change a lot.
Right.
There is structural distortion happening.
Right. Right.
Maybe a chemist would be able to think about what happens on short.
This sounds like a perfect bonding chemistry.
Yeah. There is a lot of work on that. There is a lot of work on that, but so that work can describe what happens on a very short range scale, right? But the story that I'm going to tell you describes physics on scales which are larger than lattice scale, and which cannot be addressed in those chemistry works.
Are you sure that the strength will not give rise to a really long-range force? Because
if you dilate slightly the
lattice around the hydrogen, you get strain. I mean, displacements, which are like 1 over r. It's a bit like a dislocation. So you get a logarithmic contribution for the action.
Maybe let's discuss it after, because I have an estimate somewhere. So, but also, I mean, so if you have sample on the substrate, then presumably strain wouldn't matter as much, right? So, and this data was taken on substrate. Okay. To get a feeling about Dirac-C mediated interactions, let's first look at the pairwise interactions between hydrogens. Okay, so So let's assume that there are just two hydrogen atoms, one sitting at point x1, the other sitting at point x2, let's find the interaction due to Dirac fermions. Okay, so interaction energy is given by a sum of diagrams which look like that, right? So so here you would have 4, right? 1, 2, 1, 2, and so on. And so in here, these circles basically correspond to the T matrices of each hydrogen atom. Okay?
Basically sub-energy insertions then?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, but in this case, self-energy is proportional to the T matrix.
Solid lines, are they Dirac electrons?
Dirac electrons. And here these lines represent the full Green's function, which includes both valleys, right? So that's going to make a difference. So if we resum these diagrams, then we get standard expression, which
so at the moment you're modeling with static charges and there's no distortion of that. It's a lot of lack.
Mm-hmm. So and here G12 is the G of x2 minus x1, okay?
So this expression is essentially exact, isn't it, right?
So now we need to assume something about the form of the T matrix for hydrogen atom. And that we can only really take from the first principle calculations, which suggests that that hydrogens act as very strong scatterers, right? So, and for a very strong scatterer, which basically means that we take a scatterer, which is a delta function potential with strength going to infinity. So for this potential, scattering matrix looks like that. So there is the log, which diverges at low energies, right? And so if we take the limit of a unitary scatterer, then you can neglect this unity compared to the second term, and then you get a scattering matrix which looks like that, right? So it goes as 1 over epsilon log epsilon, essentially. Now, interesting thing about this expression is that the Green's function has a matrix structure, right? So I'm going to be working in the real space. So, and then Green's function is a 2x2 matrix, right? Where upper and lower components would correspond to the subbases A and B, and so and the values of diagonal parts are different from the off diagonal ones. So let me write both ones down. Okay, so this is for the diagonal terms, and so in here, k naught is a Bessel function, and the off diagonal ones take on a different form. So here, notice that there is a vector of phi, which so here phi is basically an angle between k and r. Okay.
So also the U is actually also a matrix, right? You're scattering.
Right, but it's so.
You're taking it to be diagonal, I guess.
Well, so in the real space representation, U would have a structure either like that, right? That's if it sits on the
right.
Yeah, that's in there. Yeah. Uh-huh. So of course I'll have to worry about it once I want to calculate the interaction. Right, so if hydrogen atom sits on a sublattice site, right, then T matrix is gonna have a structure like that. And so if it sits on the B side, then it's gonna be like this. And so and actually this has this implies that interactions between hydrogens sitting on the same sublattice would be different from hydrogen sitting on the opposite sublattices, right? So, with this T matrices and Green's functions, we can calculate the interactions, what you find is the following. So let me start with the case which turns out to be more interesting, which is interaction between hydrogens of different types, which are sitting
different
sublattices. Yeah, so what you find is that the interaction is attractive, okay, and it goes as 1 over R, essentially, with the, there is also a log of the ratio of the distance between the atoms to the lattice spacing, okay?
K? What is K?
This is wave vector for the K point. So you can see that's a good point. So you can see that this sign actually oscillates on the lattice scale. Okay, and essentially it comes from the interference between the two valleys. Okay, so and so this scalar product KR, it can take only three different values, right? It can be 0, 2 pi over 3, or 4 pi over 3. Depending, so basically you can divide each sublattice. So for example, you can take a sublattice and you can divide it into three sublattices with larger period, right? And this product will take different values on those sublattices. Okay. This is mm-hmm.
And this log comes from this your choice of t. So that other log which was in t translates in this log.
From my choice of t.
Yeah, I mean this from t matrix. You had t matrix as 1 over epsilon log epsilon.
Yeah, essentially.
So mm-hmm. So does it tell me that the dependence on r is very much sensitive to what you put in t?
Well, but log is not. That's true. I mean, interaction is more sensitive to the position of the resonance, right? So for the unitary scatterer, you have resonance near zero energy, right? If your scatterer has a finite strength, then the resonance would be shifted away, right? So then your scattering matrix would look.
We'll have an exponential decay.
If the potential has a finite strength, right, then you would have some factor of delta here, right? And essentially, what it would do, it would tell you that if the atoms are closer to each other than length scale set by this delta, right? Then this answer still holds. If they're further away, then the interaction would turn into some other which decays faster. Okay. So
faster
basically,
faster but still powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. So now let's look at the interaction between hydrogens sitting on the same sublattice. That's A. So and here it turns out that interaction is repulsive and not attractive, and it's also logarithmically weaker than the attraction between hydrogens sitting on the opposite sublattices. Okay, so from this pairwise interaction picture, we find that it suggests that hydrogens would want to form dense puddles, right? Because there is attraction. So, but to quantify this gas, what we can do, we can find energy functional for some concentration of hydrogen atoms. Okay, so let's assume that there is some finite density of hydrogen atoms such that we have n hydrogen atoms per carbon atom. Right, so
I guess you have said it somehow it went by two fraction. So what is the interaction between AA and this?
So between, so let's see, that's right.
So is it bigger, stronger than the AA?
It's weaker, yeah.
I see.
So then there is some cosine.
It's the same position dependence.
Position dependence is different.
It's also log out.
It's log squared. Just, I mean, if you do those integrals, and that's what you find.
But you also want the minus sign, it's still attractive, right?
No, there is no minus sign, actually.
So here's your repulsive.
Yeah.
But it's not strong enough to counter the attraction.
Right. So it cannot, I mean, because of the log, it is weaker than the attraction, right? So they still want to, basically, they want to form a dense puddle and sit on both sublattices, right? Going back to the finite density case, to find energy as a function of hydrogen concentration, what you can do, you can employ self-consistent Born approximation, and then essentially you need to evaluate the same kind of integral that we calculated for the pairwise interactions, without going into
What do you want to do? You want to estimate the optimal size of the spiral?
Well, I want to. So at this point, I want to find energy functional. I want to find density of energy as a function of n. Okay. Within self-consistent Born approximation, you find that finite density of unitary scatterers introduces a new energy scale, which can be determined from the following equation. So essentially, it is set by the
definition is classical, right? You just stack the
Right. So and the way to understand where this energy scale is coming from is the following. So if you look at the resulting local density of states, right? Well, just density of states, okay? Then for a clean system, you just get a linear dependence, right? So finite density of hydrogens smears density of states here, right? So essentially, you get one mid-gap state per hydrogen, right? And these states are essentially give rise to constant density of state in the energy interval from minus delta to delta.
This result may not be sensitive to the detailed interactions. All you need is that each hydrogen just, you have a puddle, then each one of them suck up this electron and then.
No. At this point I'm just describing what happens to the density of states, right, within self-consistent Born approximation. Right, so I have not, I mean, I have not addressed interactions yet.
No, I was wondering whether this result depends on the details of UAB and UAA, or whether it only depends on the fact that you at the end of the day you only it's attractive that you have a uniform density that is.
I think it's sensitive to the scattering details. I mean, I will mention a little bit about it, like what happens for the weaker scatterers, because there it seems the situation is quite different actually. So, and so with the self-consistent Green function, we can find the energy functional, and what you find is that the interaction energy goes as n to the power 3/2, which, of course, we could have guessed from the pairwise picture. So because essentially the essential interaction for each hydrogen atom is determined by the nearest neighbor, because the next one feels that electronic states are already strongly perturbed. All right, so we would get that interaction per atom goes as 1 over distance between nearest neighbors, right? And then we have n atoms, right? So this goes as n to the power 3/2. So, but from this self-consistent procedure, we can find the coefficient, which it's of the order 1 EV. Okay. So, but of course, here n is not going to be too large. Okay. So, in the end, this energy won't be very large. Okay.
Sorry, what are your units here? So it's density per site. Is it unitless?
This is unitless, but then this is energy per carbon atom.
Per carbon.
Yeah. Okay. So with this energy functional, we can find the phase diagram. So that's what I would like to do next.
What do you assume about the distribution of the hydrogen atoms on the sublattices to get this?
You assume that they equally fill both sublattices. But this is, I mean, this is justified by the pairwise interaction calculation, right? So we find that the, or this is suggested by the pairwise, right, interaction. Because you find that the attraction is stronger than the repulsion, so they essentially they want to have hydrogens on both sublattices, right? And I mean, you can also, of course, you can say that this self-consistent procedure is not exact, but you can also you can do simulation, right? So what you can do, you can take finite size patch of graphene, right, and put in some vacancies, which would correspond to the hydrogen atom, right, and then you can find the energy and you can evaluate interaction energy, and actually it matches quite nicely this self-consistent calculation. Mm-hmm. But actually before going to phase diagram, maybe let me make a connection with the first principle works. So first principle works find that for example, if you put in putting hydrogen atom on some A lattice site, right? Then next one you would want to put on the opposite sublattice. Okay, so you would always want to put it either here, 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 but not here or here or here. And this is also confirmed by the STM experiment. So it's, I mean, of course, there is no reason for this result to hold on the very short length scale, but you can see that there is correspondence.
The hydrogen atoms only occupy on one sublattice?
No, they want to occupy both. They don't want to be on the same sublattice.
Okay. So I don't understand. So in first principles calculations, they could have looked at two hydrogens as well.
They did.
And right. So they found that it prefers to be on opposite sublattices.
Right.
But that's probably dominated by quite different considerations than what you're talking
about. Right. But I'm saying, right. Of course, I mean, this picture does not aim at describing that. But I think if, for example, if the short-range mechanism was giving something opposite from this one, then there could be trouble, right? But because there is no, basically they work in the same direction.
So you want to say that the hydrogens can start to congregate if they're initially dilute.
Right, but then
they can basically collapse to the smallest length scale.
They might. I mean, of course, at large densities, this thing is not valid anymore, right? So this is only valid for relatively small concentrations of hydrogen, such that distance between nearest neighbors is at least several lattice sites. But going back to the phase diagram, so with this energy functional, we can do the usual thing and find the free energy. So the entropy essentially would be the entropy of a lattice gas. Look like that. And from this free energy, you find phase diagram which is quite similar to the van der Waals gas. So in temperature and density, so there is phase boundary. So critical point T star. It's here, right? So here you have gas, here you have liquid, and here you have phase separation. Okay. So for experimental parameters, you find that there would be two phases. A dense phase of where there is a lot of hydrogen and a dilute phase, which is just a hydrogen gas. Okay. So now, of course, if we wanna make connection to electronic properties, we need to know what the droplets of dense phase look like, because dense phase is supposedly has a real gap. And is an insulator, and gas phase is probably conducting just like usual graphene. Okay, so in order to understand the shape of the droplets, one really needs to study how they're formed, right, and solve some dynamics.
I'm sorry, this, I'm not familiar with the situation. So this dense and dilute phases refers to the hydrogen, right? So you mentioned that why the dense phase will have a gap and the dilute phase don't have a gap. I think that the essential question is that whether there's the once you put in hydrogen and that you affect the in some ways the background potential seen by the or that some observation acted on the graphene system, mm-hmm. then whether they would always open up a gap and whether that would turn it into an insulator. Are you saying that if I somehow in a dilute phase, then I would never.
No, you would, but it would be more difficult. Of course, in both cases, if you introduce any arbitrarily low concentration of hydrogen, you would go insulating. But this would happen on a much larger length scale, right?
Talking about within the petal, whether it's insulating or
right. You know, because those samples are not very large, right? So it's a few microns at most. So if you have a very low concentration of hydrogens, it's unlikely that there would be localization. Localization that they observe is really rather strong, right? But then regions where there is a lot of hydrogen, those can have a real gap, right? So because the first principle people, they looked at the.
What is the origin of this open up this gap? What's the physics that
people? Well, so if you transform all the bonds into sp3, right, then you don't have any p orbitals anymore, right, and then there is no electrons don't have anywhere to hop onto. So, going back to the droplet, so if we assume for a moment that indeed the dense phase is insulating and the gas phase is well conducting, then in order for the whole.
So since the model itself does not distort the orbitals, so the electron hopping is mm-hmm. essentially is unchanged. We put on hydrogen atoms. So somehow the atom itself, the only within this model, only effect of the hydrogen atom is just a charge impurity. So my question is that why would this charge impurity basically have a uniform background of a charge and
within the model each hydrogen atom is essentially a vacancy, right? Essentially very 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 strong scattering potential corresponds to a vacancy.
Okay,
right, like taking.
That's how my misunderstanding. Because I asked earlier, I have asked the question that how the model is done, whether the atoms just like the charge, and then I have a rigid background. But that's not the case. Once you put in charge, you actually create a vacancy or.
Basically, yeah.
Huh? Thank you very
much. Sorry. One thing that may happen, but of course this is just a speculation, is that dense phase can form some so dilute phase can form cells, right, with droplets of dense phase at the boundaries, and this happens in other systems. But of course, to understand whether it really happens here, one needs to do the dynamics.
Why does it do that? Why doesn't it just form puddles? I mean.
Is this experimental fact or theoretical
This is both experiment and theory in other systems.
What kind of system is
it? Let me look it up. Okay. I will give you the reference.
Okay.
We didn't go into the dynamics of that. But so basically, so as you said, this, another possibility is that you have droplets of the insulating phase, right? But it seems like for this thing to be insulating, you density of the it has to percolate. But for that you need nearly one hydrogen atom per carbon.
Yeah, on the order of a half or something.
Right. And it's my intuition is that it would cause things a lot more dramatic than what is observed, right? Because here, still the typical number that you find from this experiment is 10 to the 12, 10 to the 13.
In fact, actually, if you do that, you're approaching the limit of graphane rather than graphene.
Right.
That's got a big gap.
Yeah. Right. Which is of the order of electron volts.
Yeah, and a strong insulator. You probably didn't see that. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's why it seems like this picture matches the experiment better. But of course, it needs to be confirmed.
You should consider the effects of the surface of the bubble. This bubble of dense phase.
Well, but they would act as antidote, essentially, right? So you can scatter, you can scatter from it, but...
No. In order to say, is it this scenario or that scenario?
I don't understand. So could you...
Nicodemus says that it's probably the first scenario.
Yeah, yeah, but he concludes just from the experiment.
Right.
Well, experiment is a pretty...
It should be in some, say, surface tension of the, this model, something like that.
Well, it's okay to understand why we form domain walls, you're saying.
Yes.
Right?
But it's also, it's question about how the puddles are formed, right? It's not, you're not looking for the ground state, okay? Because really, in this experiment, I don't think you reach thermodynamic equilibrium, right? Because first you do it at high temperature, things move around a lot, then you cool it down, and they just freeze wherever they were.
Maybe the picture misleading. So most in those cases, most likely you have just random regions like that. But it's not a regular array of.
No. Of course not. No.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It's really just. Sorry. It's just the fault, like how I drew it.
But that probably will depend on the properties of diffusion of hydrogen.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't know how much is known about how hydrogen diffuses on graphene.
Not much. We were trying to find some work on that, but couldn't. Is my time almost up?
Well, we can, if you'd like us to wind up a lot.
Yeah.
I think we can continue. You know,
I just wanted to...
What's the bottom line?
Bottom line is that there is phase separation, and that really electronic properties would be set by the dynamics, which needs to be studied. Right? We also did a couple of other things, like looked at the conductivity, assuming that there is some constant concentration of hydrogen atoms, right? Just no puddles, but just for the gas phase, right? And you find you do find the negative magnetic resistance, which I mean qualitatively. Let me just very.
So how does it compare with the current experiment with this picture?
With the how does it compare with the experiment? Not directly because so maybe let me plot. So what we got for the conductivity as a function of well, so this is going to be density, and this is going to be magnetic field. Okay? And really, I mean, you want to study the dependence on both this and that, so you need a surface plot. But I'll do my best. Okay, so if the magnetic field, so let's start from the limit of high magnetic field. And so if the magnetic field is so large that magnetic length is much smaller than distance between hydrogen atoms, then you get good quantum Hall effect, right? Because essentially each impurity would just split one state of Landau level, and it's no big deal. Right? So here you would get, so conductivity would be peaked at zero density because it's the middle of the Landau level. Then you would, it would be low, right, which corresponds to the quantum Hall plateau. Okay, so this would be zero. This would be E squared over H. Okay, so then you would get next Landau level and so on. Then, as you decrease magnetic field, right, at some point you hit the point where magnetic length is comparable to the distance between impurities. And so at this point, Landau levels start being destroyed, right? But still, so extended states cannot disappear just all of a sudden, right? They need to go to other energies, right? So you see a picture which is similar to quantum Hall states levitation, right? So, but except here they split and some go up, some go down. Right, so then there is strong Landau level mixing, of course. Right, so. And so at this point, this whole region becomes insulating. Right, so that's what you find in theory.
How do you do that calculation?
Well, only numerically. Right, you can find a spectrum here, right? Exactly, but that's about the only thing you can do. So you can estimate this energy scale, this magnetic field scale, but yeah. So, but then, so although from this picture you indeed find that magnetic resistance at the Dirac point is negative, right, and can be quite large, right? The reason why it doesn't match the experiment, well, is the following. So from this picture, if we are in the regime when there are Landau levels, right, you expect resistivity at the Dirac point to be just usual for the quantum Hall effect, to be H over E squared of the order, right, depending on the Landau level degeneracy. But if we go back to the experiment and look at this picture, right, there are shoulders which are really quite flat, which suggests that at least in some region of your system, there are good Landau levels. But still you find that the resistivity is very high. So, I mean, the way I understand it is that there may be regions where there are Landau levels, but then there are also highly resistive regions between them, right? So what you measure is really not this, but some resistance in series of this and that of some insulating region. Okay, that's just just a guess.
The picture you draw here, though, has a definite prediction here. I mean, you're saying that there should be some, for some quantum Hall states, there should be reentrance, right? Because initially these extended states go down and back up.
Right.
There are some examples, I mean, not related to graphene, but there are some examples in quantum Hall states where they see that. So
right.
It's possible to be observed here.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think Manchester group is taking some more data, so.
At some point at low field, you should get a metallic regime when the Fermi wavelength is sufficiently short compared to the distance between hydrogen atoms.
Would you?
You would go back to a metallic regime.
I'm not sure, I mean, why, so I think you would, so why?
And treat electrons as classical particles because the wavelength is very short and they fit between the hydrogen atoms.
Let's see. But this is actually, this is really, I mean, say, I'm not so sure.
I mean, it seems that, well, I mean, maybe I have not understood the picture correctly. If I really take this plot literally, then the now and compare with that data. Now at some field value, you get these three different peaks.
Right,
and
right.
That would correspond to a line somewhere out there, right? Like draw a perpendicular line.
Like here, right?
Well, I mean, there are two lines. So I can draw a line here, and then I draw a line here.
Right.
Presumably, these things also belong now. Here, then I may have several peaks, right?
Right, which come from different Landau levels.
Here,
right?
Well, I think depending on that, but it, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, the problem is usually for higher Landau levels there is a lot more mixing. So in many graphene samples you only see the plateaus coming from the zeros Landau level. Okay, so it's not so, and this is because Landau level separation between zeros and first is a lot larger, right? So often what they see in the experiment, I mean not in this experiment, but just any graphene experiment, that if they measure sigma xy, you can see this, and then so these plateaus are really usually a lot more pronounced than the higher ones. So I wouldn't, I mean, here you have so much disorder that probably there isn't much chance to observe higher plateaus.
May I just return to ask another? So if I want to find out what is the mental evidence to distinguish the screening between a ordinary electron and Dirac electrons, what are the mental evidence that show me that in these cases the screening is actually due to Dirac electrons?
Screening.
Yeah, because the charge in the screen by some, but because here all the calculations are based on assuming the direct electron, right? So there's a fundamental difference. Presumably, there's some fundamental difference between. What my question is whether there is a fundamental difference between the two types of screening, and if there is a fundamental difference, what are the fundamental signatures?
Well, I mean, I think there is a, you know. In graphene, you can have a region where density of carriers is very low, right? And then there is no screening.
Yeah, I think you just mean, do you really mean screening, or do you mean just this mediated interaction?
I think the more generally is there
screening.
Is there any signature to clearly show that the electrons are Dirac-like?
Well, Landau level spectrum is the clearest signature.
Okay, screening, I don't.
I mean, screening.
Well,
you're just asking a question. You're asking a very general question.
No, I'm asking that if I want to enumerate from the experiments the evidence for the Dirac electrons.
Simply the fact that graphene is, the electrons in graphene are described by the Dirac equation. You're asking what's the evidence that that's the case.
So you say the Landau level is a Landau.
But Landau level, the Hall conductance is one, but tunneling is another.
The conductivity.
There's a lot of, it's not really related to this topic, a lot of experiments that agree, at least.
So from theory, there would be a lot of there's a major distinction between the screening. Suppose I look at the screening of the charge at Berkeley. Usually, I use the RKKY type of thing.
Yeah.
But what would happen to that in this case?
Yeah, there's been a lot of calculations on it. And there's a big difference. Okay, so if you have a doped, I mean, this is a different discussion. But if you have doped graphene, then basically the RKKY interactions, for example, are very similar to what you get for Fermi liquid. But then the power law changes when you're precisely at zero doping. So that's one issue.
You don't have Condor effect, for instance.
Okay.
You don't have Condor effect.
But actually
exactly
there.
No,
right. But it depends, yeah,
on
because
whether you have a strong scatter, like this, it depends on the scalar potential associated to the magnetic.
Because
well,
actually.
Just a linear dispersion,
Because in terms of Condor effect, I think there is an experiment where they do find Condor effect at relatively low densities of carriers. Probably. I mean, that experiment was with cobalt atoms on the epitaxially grown graphene, though, not on.
So graphite, basically.
Well, this, you know, depends whom you ask, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, any other questions or comments? I have a couple.